It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right. Welcome to Money for Lunch. It's good to have you here. And hopefully you had a great weekend, Memorial Day weekend. Here in the good U.S. of A, we celebrate our brave men and women who have, in some cases, have given everything you can give to protect your country, right? To honor your country and your flag and everything that it stands for. So big thank you to those brave men and women, as well as the brave men and women who continue to serve our country. And let's not forget our veterans who need our support more than ever. So just a quick shout out. If you know of a vet that is struggling, and a good 80% of vets do struggle on some level, please have them reach out. Do not let them suffer in silence. If you need some referrals, you can reach me at Bert@BertMartinez.com. I'll be glad to connect you with some people that I trust, as well as you can connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, and Instagram. So, you know, those are the best places to reach me at. And real quick, kind of changing subjects here, let's talk about YouTube.com/Bert J. Martinez, because there's at least, several thousand of you who have not subscribed there. I mean, come on, what's holding you up? Here's the deal. If you subscribe to my YouTube channel and let me know that you did so, you get free food from Chili's. That's right. My partners there at Chili's will send you a certificate. I think it's $10 for free Chili's food, no blackout dates, no restrictions. So come on. Let's do it. Bert J. Martinez. Just go to YouTube.com. You can just go to YouTube.com, Bert J. Martinez, or you can go to YouTube.com/Bert J. Martinez, or you can just go to YouTube, type in Bert Martinez, and you'll find, you know, little old me. My goal is to hit 1,000 subscribers by the end of June, and I need your help. That's it. And what do you get in return? Well, you get some awesome videos. I did a video with actor James Caan. Another video that we're releasing is with business celebrity Tom Hopkins. And so you get those first before they're released to anybody else. That's one of the things that you get. Plus, I'll send you some free swag. So it's a win-win all the way around. All right, let's get this party started with my first guest, Andrew Ajemi. Andrew Ajemi just so happens to be kind of a return guest. He has been with us multiple times in the area of wealth advisory, if you will. Andrew is also dedicated to continually striving to advance his knowledge of financial trends in efforts to serve his clients more effectively. Since opening his firm in 1990, he has started an investment advisory firm, Ajemi Wealth Advisors, as well as a tax planning and preparation firm. Andrew Ajemi, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Hey, Bert, thank you. Appreciate it. It's great to be here. And I'd just like to take a moment to piggyback on what you said about the veterans. And you know, when I get a chance, I like to, tell a veteran thank you, because they have given up their freedoms so that I could have my freedoms, and I really enjoy my freedom. So thank you, all you vets, all those that have served, are serving, will serve, and those that have sent loved ones to serve. Thank you very much from the bottom of my heart. I appreciate it. So
that's wonderful.
Great.
Absolutely correct. You know, it's good to have you back. And you know, something sometimes we don't think about the fact that these families, since you mentioned sending loved ones to serve. You know, in some cases, when it's a spouse, you know, puts a big sacrifice, a big burden on those families who are staying behind. So, absolutely, I'm glad you mentioned that. And anyway, it's good to have you here. And let's talk about what your thoughts are, since we haven't talked, I don't think, since Trump's taken office. So let's talk. Give me some thoughts. What do you see some positives, some negatives? Tell me.
Well, you know, this is a real interesting thing, Bert, because, you know, I have, you know, obviously there's two sides, right? You know, whether you call it right and left or whatever. Those, how about we call it like this? Those who were for Trump and those who weren't for Trump, okay? And those who are not for Trump, you know, they're coming to my office and they're scared because they don't know what will happen. But I say to them, you know, this is exactly what happened 8 years ago when those who are for Trump came into my office when the administration had changed. So, you know, it's very interesting. But, you know, I think it was so interesting that the market just jumped up as soon as he was elected, and the optimism from Wall Street for him and for his plans and that kind of thing. And we saw that, you know, kept going until he couldn't get the health care bill through and kind of stalled everything at that standpoint. And you know, what will happen from here is going to, you know, it's anybody's guess. To me, it just is a continuation of the artificial inflation that's happening in the market and has started back in 2008 with all the various stimulus packages, you know, cash for clunkers, TARP, quantitative easing 1, QE2, twist, QE3, you know, and QE3 stopped in October of 14. We felt some of the effects for a little bit while, and then Mr. Trump gets in and, you know, it's kind of still, you know, kind of artificial based upon what they hope he's going to do, and, you know, time will tell.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, and again, whether you are for Trump or against, you know, I hate to use the word against, but let's say you didn't support Trump. I guess the reality, there are some people who are against Trump. You know, they're not going to cut him any slack. But, right, you know, that's just part of being president. And here's my whole take on it is here's a guy who had no support from his own party,
right,
no support from a major media outlet, no support
right
from a celebrity endorsement type situation, you know, and so he persisted, and whether you supported him or not, you got to give him his fair due there. I mean,
I agree.
The guy, first of all, here's a guy who's, what, 70 years old, I think? How old is
right
he?
Right. Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah, he's 70. Or
70
when
years
he was
old.
Elected, he was. I mean, he may have had a birthday by now, but when he was elected, he was.
Right. So to me, he did not act like a 70-year-old. That guy had energy like a 30-year-old. I mean, the guy was everywhere. He was nonstop. So, again, you have to admire his tenacity, his ability, his energy level. So, again,
yeah,
just looking at it strictly from, you know, getting things done, you have to give him his props. And, you know, I imagine that you see this all the time, in the sense that anytime they switch administrations, some people are in fear and some people are excited.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you got the both sides. And, you know, but the thing that in my mind, as far as the market is concerned, Bert, is that, you know, the market goes through different cycles. You know, a full stock market cycle is 30 to 40 years long, made up of a 15 to 20 year bear market and a 15-20, you know, where it hibernates like a bear, and 15-20 year bull market where it charges like a bull. And in 2000, we ended the 15-20 year bear market or bull market, we began the 15-20 year bear market. And how I'm defining that is the amount of time it takes for the market to go above its previous high and stay above the previous high. And I don't think the market the market is above the previous high of 11.7 from 2000, but I don't think it's going to stay above it for a lot of reasons. And my point that I'm trying to bring out here is that part of the reason for it, doesn't matter who's president, doesn't matter what party is in, what matters is people. And what happens at the market is people are the same. you know, they about the moment that one generation forgets the mistakes of another generation, they make the same mistakes. Kind of like Vietnam,
yeah.
Right? They said, oh, we will never enter another, you know, war without an exit strategy. And where are we? We're in a war without an exit strategy.
Right.
So the market, you know, is going to do what the market does, and what the market does is go through certain repeatable and predictable trends and cycles. And the question is when, not if.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know what? And there is a gentleman, interestingly enough, that made a study of all these changes. He's I think the title or what he does is a demographer, right? He studies
uh-huh.
demographics. He studies what's
yep.
happening in the population. And yep. interestingly enough, he says right now teen pregnancies are an all-time low, and
wow.
they connect that with the reason that's happening is because teen drivers are an all-time
yeah.
low because they're using Uber. They're not getting
wow.
their driver's license, you know, until they're 17 or 18 or 19. You know, some of these guys
yeah.
are just, you know, when you and I were growing up, it was a rite of passage.
Yeah.
I didn't know anybody who wasn't excited about getting their driver's license.
Right.
I have two
exactly.
teenagers left at home, and they're you know. Them, along with the groups that they hang out with, they're
yeah.
very lax about getting a driver's license. They don't find it that big of a deal.
Right. Yeah, I understand that. That's I think just goes about, you know, our society has changed so much in so many ways, you know, over you know, say 30 years, but definitely 40 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so much different in so many ways. You know, I'm not going to go any farther than that, Bert, because I'm afraid I'll put my foot in my mouth. So.
Oh yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about this. Let's see if we can drop some knowledge on some folks there. And I wanted to kind of pick your brain about tax preparation. First of all, this took me a long time to realize, but, you know, preparing your taxes, having a tax strategy or a tax plan is
yeah.
one of the key, strategies for preserving your wealth. And again, this is something that's overlooked by many people, you know, because growing up, you know, your parents never talk about, you know, tax strategies. They talked about saving your money. Sometimes they
yeah.
talked about saving your money and investing your money. But I never heard all three, you know, save your money, invest your money, and, you know, have a tax plan or tax strategy. And so here we are. We are closing in on the second quarter, the end of the second quarter. Half of the year is blown by. Is it
yeah.
too early to start thinking about taxes?
Well, no, not at all. And, you know, some people say, but I just finished my taxes, or maybe some
yeah.
people haven't even finished their taxes because they file extensions. But,
right.
You know, especially the more, you know, the more you're involved in finance, what I mean by that is maybe you're a business owner or whatever the case may be. But even if you're not, it's important to look at what's going on. Are you putting enough into your 401k? You know, that's a big tax strategy for a lot of people. You know, are you having too much withheld out of your paycheck so that, you know, you get a huge tax refund, but you're starving it from here, you know, from here to there kind of thing. So
right.
it's definitely an important thing to do. And you're absolutely right. Cause it's not just about so many times we focus on, our money and making money, but it's not just about how much you make. It's about how much you keep that counts, you know?
Yes.
And that's where the tax strategies comes in. And, you know, I have a tax, besides having a financial and wealth management firm, I have a tax firm as well where we prepare taxes for people. And that's one of the things we focus on at tax time. I have one guy that prepares the taxes, and I sit with the people to talk to them about strategies that they can use for, you know, the current year that we're in. Because, you know, once January 1st comes, most of all, you're not dealing with tax planning. You're dealing with taking care of the what's left over kind of thing. You know, you're just taking
right.
care of you know, whatever you can. But so thinking about that now is definitely an important thing to do. I agree with you. That's good.
Yeah.
The sooner the better.
The sooner the better. I like that so much. It's so vitally important. And this is one of those things where, again, it is a tax plan or a tax strategy, and some of it is not very complicated. As you mentioned, you know, putting money into your what do you call it, IRA or your 401 is a simple tax strategy. You know, in some cases, you know, maybe creating an LLC might benefit you. And again, that's for you to sit down with your strategist and figure that out. But there are so many ways that you can legally avoid, the key word there, legally avoid paying taxes that you don't need to.
Right, exactly. And I think there was a Supreme Court judge back in the 60s that said it's every American's right and duty to, you know, pay to legally pay as little taxes as possible. You know, and so that's what we need to be able to do is to look at that. And, you know, just talking about, let me just put something out here for the our listeners today, Bert, which is, you know, some people don't understand how 401ks work, for instance, and they think, oh, if I put a dollar in my 401k, that means a dollar less in my paycheck. Well, depending what tax bracket you're in, I mean, in the state of Connecticut, I have a lot of people that come in are paying between federal 25% and state of Connecticut 5-6%. They're paying 30%. So what that means is, for every dollar that they put into their 401k, it's only costing them 70 cents out of their paycheck. From that standpoint, so their paycheck doesn't go down as much as what they think, and they can end up putting more away. And in this day where people don't have pensions as often as they did in yesteryear, that's a very important thing to be putting away 10-20%, if not more, into your 401k ultimately. So hopefully that's helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very helpful because, and you correct me if I'm wrong, with the 401, allows you flexibility within your 401. Is that right? You can pick and choose certain options. Yep. And you correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe it's the IRA, but I think in the 401 you can actually buy, let's say, real estate and invest in other situations. You're not restricted to just the 401 mutual fund, right?
Yeah. Well, you were correct when you said it's the IRA that allows you to do that. An IRA allows you to invest in the universe of options that are available out there, and one of those being real estate if you have the right setup and so forth. But, you know, typically 401k plans are presented, you know, it's the company has designated which accounts, which mutual funds are available to you. You know, mutual fund 401ks are typically designed for young people, so typically there's aggressive investments in there, and they're not designed for people in retirement or close to retirement, which is who I deal with a lot, or basically almost exclusively. But that's one thing people need to understand is, as you get closer to retirement, you need to change from a growth mindset to an income strategy, which is a totally different thing. And a lot of people don't. And then when the market drops 50% or more, like it did in 2000 and 2008, and what I expect is going to happen at some point here in the near future, you know, their 401k turns into a 201k. And if they're 50 or 60 years old, that's a problem. If they're 20 or 30 years old, even 40, it's not a problem so much. But that's an important thing for people to be considering is, you know, I agree with you, you know, the allocations of how they invest their money is another thing. And just, you know, one of the things I forgot to say was when I was saying that 70 cents on the dollar, their paycheck going down by 70 cents, it was the aspect of some employers match you to a certain extent. And if you don't participate in your 401k at all, and they're a matching, you're giving up part of your paycheck people say, well, I'm only planning to be there 1 year, 2 years, and then, you know, before they know it, they're there 7 years. They haven't put any money into their 401k and gave up that paycheck, that little piece of their paycheck. So that's an important aspect for people to be mindful of.
Absolutely. And so one of the judges, anyway, a very famous judge that I don't know if this is the guy you were talking about, but his name is Judge Learned Hand. And he said, anyone may arrange his affairs so that the taxes shall be as low as possible. He is not bound to choose that pattern which best pays the treasury. There is not even a patriotic duty to increase one's taxes. Over and over again, the courts have said that there is nothing sinister in so arranging affairs as to keep taxes as low as possible. Everyone does it, rich and poor alike, and all do it right. For nobody owes any public duty to pay more than the law demands.
There you go. That's the one I'm thinking of. I paraphrased it, but that's the idea. Yeah, exactly. That was great. Judge Hand. That's wonderful.
Yep. So it's you know, this is something that I have what do you call it, come to spend more time on, because you know, the example you gave is perfect. I mean, if you're paying, you know, a certain percentage in federal taxes, you're paying a certain percentage in state income tax, it's vitally important that every time you can save, you know, a percent here, a percent there, it's going directly to your bottom line, and it's so vitally important.
I agree. And you know, for people to even though it's basically, you know, Memorial Day is thought to be the start of summer, and they don't certainly want to think about taxes, it's a good time to be considering that. And if you have a tax advisor or a financial person that you go to, talk to them about taxes and what your W-2s look like, how much is being withheld, how about your 401ks, are they allocated properly, are you putting enough in, should you put in more, those kinds of things. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Andrew Jemmy, this has been a lot of fun. It's good to catch up with you, and we'll have to bring you back a little bit sooner. Andrew Jemmy, if somebody wants to go to your website, what's the best website for you?
It's just very simple. It's my last name, AGEMY.com. So the two words, age my, spell the last name of Ajemy. So that's the best place to go. And you know what, Bert? What I would like to say is I have a book. It's called Return on Principle, written by a great friend of mine, about seven core values to help protect your money in good times and bad. And if you'd like to, anybody of our listeners, like copy of that book, please either hit our website or office@ajemy.com and request that book, and we'll send that out to you.
Great. So it's ajemy.com, and you can get a copy of free book. And
that's
Andrew,
correct.
As always, my friend, good to have you here.
Thanks, Bert. Look forward to catching up with you again another time. Thank you.
Absolutely. Good stuff. All right. So good stuff there from Andrew. Apparently I screwed up his name. I thought it was a Jemmy, but it's Ajemy. And you can go to Ajemy, A-G-E-M-Y, and get that free book. And also, he's got tons of resources there as well. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Bobby Klink. Bobby Klink is a best-selling author and intellectual property attorney who helps entrepreneurs, startups, and innovators harness the power of their intellectual property rights and reduce exposure to lawsuits or brand challenges in the marketplace. His books are His books are titled The Entrepreneur's IP Planning Playbook and Patent Litigation Primer. Bobby Klink, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
You bet, you bet. All right, so let me ask you this. When, as a startup, as an entrepreneur, as an innovator, when should I be looking at a patent?
Well, you should be thinking about a patent, but also all of your intellectual property from the beginning. What I'll tell you is patents are, in a sense, the aspect of intellectual property that, in my view, get way too much attention, especially for entrepreneurs and most startups. Unless you are a company that has really developed a truly innovative product, a patent is probably not going to be the best bang for your buck. It's going to cost you probably $10,000 or more to get a patent, just in attorney's fees, et cetera. It's going to take you 3 or maybe more years of your life to get the patent. And the statistic most people don't realize is of the patents that ultimately get issued, about 95% of them or more never actually get sold as a product or get licensed to someone else. So if you think about it, there's a pretty good chance, a 19 out of 20 chance that if you get a patent, you'll end up not ever using it, not making a dime back from it. So that you should be really careful before you go after a patent. You should look at other aspects or other ways to get protection first to see if there's a cheaper, easier, faster way to do it.
Oh, that's okay. So let's talk about that. What are some of your suggestions? What are some cheaper alternatives to just hitting the patent process?
Well, the most obvious way that you can potentially get similar kinds of protections is through an area of law called trade secrets. Trade secret law applies to any confidential information that you keep within your business. Again, if it's a product, you can't really protect the product with a trade secret because necessarily you sell it to someone out in the market and it's no longer a secret. But if you have, you know, a software as a service company where you can shield the actual back-end software coding so that people don't have access to that or would only have access through a contractual relationship with an API or something like that, you can put contractual provisions in place that says to anyone who you're doing business with, hey, you can't disclose this information and you can't use it for any purpose other than to integrate with our product. So you can do things like that. And the classic example of a trade secret is the Coca-Cola formula. That formula has been kept secret for over a century now. And if they would have patented it, they would have had to disclose that to the world. And after a period of now it would be 20 years from the day you file your patent application, anybody could start selling the competing product. That's what happens with drugs these days, where you file a patent and then ultimately someone is able to sell a competing product after the patent expires.
Gotcha. Okay. So I file a patent and the 20-year clock starts ticking the minute I file the application, whether or not it's approved. It starts ticking at that point. And so you got 20 years from the time that you file that application. And then after those 20 years run out, does that mean I have no protection?
So if you do a patent, that's right. And because the patent is – if you actually get a patent, it is the strongest level of protection you can get. And again, here's the contrast with a trade secret. So a trade secret, someone can try to reverse engineer your product. And if they're able to reverse engineer it and figure it out, they can use it. They just can't get the information from you or one of your employees or something else and then use it against you or use it to compete. With a patent, if you have a patent, they can't even reverse engineer the product. They just can't sell a competing product or they have to take a license. And so the system is set up so that you have a delicate balance where in exchange for getting these very strong protections, you have to disclose your invention to the world. That's the whole point of it, basically to allow for advancement of science. And so after your term is up, you lose all protection. I mean, you can still keep selling your product, obviously, but anyone else can start selling a competing product as well.
Sure, sure. All right, so let's talk about this real quick. here you are, you work with, again, entrepreneurs, startups, innovators, and in your experience, what is the biggest legal mistake that business owners make?
Well, so the biggest legal mistake that a lot of business owners make, it's a broad across-the-board mistake they make that is sometimes related to intellectual property and sometimes not, and it's they don't get their agreements in writing. You see a lot of people who are running effectively a partnership because there are two people running the company together, but they don't have any agreement. And so there's nothing written that spells out who owns what the responsibilities are, what happens if someone wants to get out of the company, what happens when someone dies, all of those types of contingencies that you need to have spelled out in a written agreement. It has implications in my line of work in the intellectual property realm as well, because any federally protected intellectual property, so that's patents, that's trademarks, it's copyrights, that has to be transferred in a written document. I can't say to you orally, I'm transferring my interest in this patent to you. So if you don't have written agreements in place, guess what? Your company doesn't actually own a lot of the assets that you think it owns. So you need to have written documents that lay out all of the fundamental agreements that are important to your company. And that is the issue that I see time and again. And I will have so many entrepreneurs come to me thinking they have an intellectual property problem, and really all they have is a contract problem. So that's an overarching issue that too many entrepreneurs make. There are business advantages of getting a deal in writing as well. But most notably, you actually make sure that you have an agreement, because if you don't have it in writing, people may have a different understanding than you do. But the act of actually putting it in writing makes sure that you are all on the same page.
Right. You know, and it's amazing to me that with all the litigation, all the bad blood that has been publicized about people not having stuff in writing, that people would put something in writing. I mean, look, if you and I are good friends and I think this is one of the problems, right? Because you and I are such good friends, we don't need anything in writing because we've been best friends forever and we've always worked things out. But, you know, a simple email saying, hey, Bobby, this is what you get, and Bert, this is what I get, and everybody agrees on, and then we can, you know, it just makes things easier, because the reality is that, you know, our memories fade. We sometimes even recreate memories, and you know, all of a sudden there's bad feelings and families that were close all of a sudden are torn apart. It's amazing to me that people don't put it in writing. It's so simple.
Well Bert, I think you hit the nail on the head. One of the big problems is, and I don't think it's just friends, entrepreneurs,
right?
There's this great saying that entrepreneurs are inherently optimists, because I mean, if you weren't an optimist, there's no way you choose this profession, because so many entrepreneurs are going to fail, and you're going to fail multiple times before you succeed, most likely. So because of that, entrepreneurs just always tend to see the positive, and so they don't think about the negative. They don't think about the what if there's a problem, and that's what you need agreements for. I mean, another one of the reasons I think why – people don't do it is they think that it has to be something that costs a lot of money. They think they have to come hire someone like me or a business attorney and spend thousands and thousands of dollars to get an agreement written. You don't. I mean, as you move along the life cycle of your company, if you're going towards funding a startup, et cetera, you might need to get a better document. But you know, what you mentioned, get an email that everybody agrees to. Then you've got something in writing, you know, or just write something down on Word. Both of you sign it, and you know, that's it. And you have something in place. But also, you know, you're saying you can't believe it. And I want to tell people they shouldn't feel bad by making this mistake, because I'm a lawyer and I made the mistake 7 years ago.
Wow.
7 years ago, I was transitioning out of being a partner – or sorry, out of being a federal prosecutor, and I made the decision to go to this very small startup firm that had been around a year and a half, 2 years at the time. I joined them essentially on a promise. I had a letter that said I was entitled to such and such salary, but I recognized they didn't currently have cash flow, and so I wasn't going to get paid until the company had cash flow. And so I had all the downside risk, but none of the guaranteed upside risk. And we didn't have anything in that letter about how I would ultimately become a partner in the business. And fast forward about 4 years, and to a point where I had just had a baby, or my wife had just had a baby. And I was said, hey, we have to actually formalize this agreement. Because again, they treated me completely fairly, but I said, hey, I want it in writing. And at that point, we couldn't work it out. And that's what often happens. When you get further down the road, it's going to get harder and harder and harder. And you mentioned the hurt feelings. Well, one of these two partners in the firm had literally flown through Tropical Storm Sandy to get to my wedding in the Bahamas, not a year and a half earlier, or about a year and a half earlier. And because of what happened to us having this, I mean, not a fight, but a disagreement when we tried to work the deal out, you know, we got to the point that we really weren't talking for a while. So it's not something that even lawyers don't screw up from time to time. So don't feel bad, but there's no time better than today to get it worked out. So go out there and take care of this problem and take care of it now.
Yeah, no, I love that. You know, it's just, I guess, part of human nature. I mean, if it can happen to, you know, attorneys who are in it, you know, who do it every day, and you know, it can happen to anybody. And you know, what's interesting is I'm from Texas, and I remember, you know, I think it was, I know it was an oil company. I just can't remember. It's one of the big oil companies. You know, they had a handshake deal that went awry, and so it was proven in a court of law that they did have a handshake deal, and that the oil company had breached it, and the prevailing party ended up winning a couple of, I forgot if it was $1 billion, but it was a sizable amount. But it took 3 or 4 or 5 years for all that to go through. And so not only, you know, so to kind of echo what you're saying, not only does it happen to everybody, it doesn't matter. It doesn't seem to matter how big a deal is, a multi-billion dollar oil deal or a salary deal or whatever. It happens. People want to move forward fast. They don't want to be, they're afraid that they're going to offend you by saying, hey, let's put it in writing. And it's just funny.
Yeah. And people think, I think part of it is thinking, oh, trying to work this out is going to be hard. And that's true. But the problem is, it's not going to get easier. It's only going to get harder. So that's one of the things, especially early on. I mean, when you're first doing a deal, there won't be hurt feelings. I mean, maybe somebody will feel like you're playing hardball, but you know, if you have a certain expectation that you need to get, whether it's a certain number of dollars or a certain percentage, the best time to know that that's not going to happen is before you've spent years of your life, working on a project. So get it done at the beginning, or, you know, find out that you should just walk away. Either way, you're going to be better off by getting it kind of worked out early on.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and this is one of those hard pills to swallow. Sometimes walking away is just really the best thing you can do. It's just one of those things that, you know, sometimes we forget that opportunities are a dime a dozen. And we get so locked into, I got to get this deal done. I got to get this job. I got to get this. I'm going to lose out if I don't. This might be my last chance to, you know, to make something of myself. And you start forcing that square peg into a round hole. And then, you know, a few months later, a few weeks later, a few months later, a few years later, you regret it.
Yep.
All right.
Yep,
go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going to say, yeah, the truer words have rarely been spoken.
All right. So we just talked about the biggest legal mistake that business owners make, just getting something in writing. It could be a simple Word document or email. I think that's a nice little nugget there. Let's talk about intellectual property. This is your area of expertise. What is the biggest mistake business owners make with respect to intellectual property issues?
Well, I'm gonna give you two rather than one. Okay. The first one has to do with branding and naming, and so this falls under the kind of silo that's known as trademarks. And a trademark is just a term for intellectual property that relates to the source of a good or service. So the classic example is your name, so Coca-Cola, for example, but also a slogan, Just Do It, is a trademark slogan because obviously we know that that means a product came from Nike. And the mistake that people make is they will spend months sometimes spitballing, brainstorming, testing, and trying to come up with the perfect name. And once they do it, from a business perspective, they stop. And they don't take the time to make sure that someone else isn't already using the name. And that is a kind of cardinal mistake, a huge mistake that you just can't make. And here's why. What's going to happen if you do that is if someone else is using the name, guess what? They're not going to hear about you at the beginning. And so you're going to spend money, time, sweat, building up your brand. And the person who has the right to the name is going to hear about you when you get to be successful. And then you're going to get a nasty cease and desist letter from them telling you to stop using the name. And so then after you've spent maybe it's months, maybe it's years building up your brand, building your equity in that name and that brand and the idea and the concept, you're going to have to stop using it. And that, if you think about it, is a huge mistake. And again, so let's say that you had done the search when you first came up with the name and discovered that you couldn't use it. Well, you probably could have made a little tweak here or there. You could have come up with something that was as good, but you could use. And so you would have been able to build your brand, build your equity with the other name. But because you didn't, all of a sudden you've wasted time, money, et cetera. So that is the first mistake that I see people make over and over again. So the nugget is, once you come up with your name, make sure to run a trademark clearance. You don't necessarily have to file a trademark. Just make sure you run a trademark clearance to make sure no one else already has it or is using it. The other mistake I see is in the area we talked about briefly, which is trade secrets. Trade secrets are – I like to refer to as the Rodney Dangerfield of intellectual property. They just don't get the respect they deserve. They don't get no respect. they are – a trade secret for most entrepreneurs, especially online entrepreneurs, a trade secret is probably your most valuable avenue of protection. It protects anything that is valuable and confidential so long as you take reasonable steps to keep it confidential. And where entrepreneurs fall down is on that last part, taking reasonable steps to keep it confidential. So what does that mean? That means you need to have confidentiality agreements in place with your employees, with contractors, with any vendors, anybody who has access to anything that is confidential, proprietary to you, needs to be under an agreement that says anything they learn while working for you, they can't use except for your business. And that in and of itself, if you just took that step, that could be hugely important. But let me try to put the idea of what a trade secret is into very plain terms for entrepreneurs. Your email list, your customer database, all of those things are trade secrets if you keep them confidential. If you don't, your employee could take those with them, start a competing company, charge $10 less than you, and use all of your contacts against you potentially. So that is the other mistake I see. You know, you've got to have those confidentiality agreements in place to make sure that you don't run into that problem or that difficulty.
That's amazing. Yeah, and it kind of, you know, it makes sense. I mean, look, you brought that up, and I remember, and it automatically triggered IBM. IBM was a company that was started by, I believe, Mr. Watson, I believe is his last name. But anyway, so he worked for the National Cash Register Company. There was the CEO of that company, NCR, pissed off Mr. Watson. And he started IBM, to compete directly mm-hmm. with him, and he did use some of his contacts, you know, because when you spend 4, 5, 10 years building somebody else's company, you're going to develop contacts. You're going to develop resources that you're going to assume you have some right to use.
Well, and right, and you know, you can use that, but I think we probably all actually experienced it in more subtle ways. I don't know. I mean, if you have a lawn service or a maid service, if you ever use one of kind of yeah. I don't call it a national company, but if you go online and find all these big companies, what will happen? And I've had this happen to me on both of those times. You know, a team that has been assigned to us multiple times says, "Hey, we're going to go out on our own. Would you like to use us instead of the company? And you know, we'll charge you, you know, 10% less or something." And so you think about it, it is a problem that happens over and over again. And, you know, you've spent a lot of time as an entrepreneur and probably some money. I mean, you know what your cost of acquisition of a lead is. So you've spent money to get those leads. You need to protect them, because the last thing you want is for one of your, you know, one of your employees to leave and start a competing company. Again, look, I mean, if they brought the lead in, they probably get to use it, and you can't win. But at least you can limit what they can do and the damage they can do if you have a confidentiality agreement in place.
Yes, absolutely. And again, back to what you said originally, it's not that hard to put something in writing.
Right.
I mean, this doesn't have to be a huge document. It could be just one simple paragraph that, hey, you're going to keep my trade secrets, including email list, customer list, blah, 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 trade secret, or you're going to keep all this information confidential and you're not going to use it without written permission. I mean, it doesn't take a lot of time to put that together.
That's right. Yeah. And it's more, you know, knowing what you need to do, I find, is the big problem that a lot of people have. But yeah, I mean, that's right. You can draft that pretty easily yourself. And hey, if you don't want to do it, I mean, you can go on to a place like LegalZoom and get some template documents pretty cheaply as well. And it's worth the investment for your business.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that today, you know, it's just amazing to me that these little simple things that we're talking about are big deals, or they're not. They might sound simple, but they're really big. We're talking, you know, these things could cost you tens of thousands, if not millions of dollars. Well, let's talk about this. Again, you mentioned this issue when you were transitioning from federal prosecutor into the private sector. Do you have any other lessons that you learned about business the hard way?
Yeah, I've got a lot of those. They're not necessarily legally related. And, you know, the biggest one I would say I learned was when I transitioned out of that other firm and started my own practice. And I already at that point really was before I left that firm, was spending the majority of my time doing intellectual property work. That's what I was doing. But so I transitioned out of that, started my own firm, and felt like I was starting from scratch because I didn't have clients coming in the door. I didn't have my existing clients, et cetera. So I had to decide what I was going to do. And I made probably one of the classic mistakes that entrepreneurs make. I tried to cast my net as wide as possible because I didn't want to miss any opportunity. So instead of sticking a stake in the ground saying I'm an intellectual property lawyer, I tried to do a little bit of everything. And the problem was that meant I couldn't really market, because how do you market when you don't have a consistent message? I couldn't even have my colleagues or my contacts know what I did. So my family, my friends, they couldn't really refer people because they couldn't say, well, Bobby does this. I mean, they didn't really know what I did. And so it made it impossible to get referrals. So I had kind of an aha moment when I was working with a business coach who focuses on working with lawyers. And she said, what kind of lawyer are you? And that was when I stuck, you know, kind of finally, you know, took the position, said, I am an intellectual property lawyer. That's how I'm marketing myself. I don't do other things. You know, I'm not a generalist. I do this. But then she said, okay, well, what industry do you work with? And I said, I'd never thought about that issue. And she had in mind that she was thinking of you know, probably Internet of Things or telematics or something like that of a technology area. But instead, in giving it a lot of thought, that's when I came and said, no, I work with entrepreneurs. That's what I do, and that's what I want to do. And so that moment was an important turning point in my business, but also in my life. I mean, that's what made it so that coming to the office was really fun again, because I had a real purpose. I had a real mission in life. It also made it easier to market, to tell the world what I did, to tell potential referral sources what I did, et cetera. So it made things easier. So I think the lesson is you have to specialize. You have to niche down. You have to, you know, find your particular sub market, and you will be much more successful when you do that.
Yeah, you know, this is one of those things that I also learned the hard way, you know, because it's counterintuitive, right? Because think about it, if you're an attorney or a business owner and you cater everybody, then you should be able to make tons of business because everybody's your customer. But the problem is, as you pointed out, is that you don't have a brand, you know, I mean, you know, as opposed to now you can say, hey, you know, go to Bobby. He's the patent guy. He's the patent attorney. You know, he works with entrepreneurs. He works with people just like you. That's all he does. It's an easy referral, as opposed to somebody who might say, hey, Bert, do you know an attorney? And I'm going, I know an attorney, but I'm not really sure what Bobby does, 'cause he does so much.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, and I was going to say, I think, you know, as you move along in your business, I mean, the more specific you get, the better. I mean, to give you an example, I'm currently developing an online course that's going to, you know, be the idea being help people learn all the things they need to do and create all these documents, et cetera, without having to hire an attorney. And for
right.
that, I literally have an avatar where, you know, it's Edgar is his name. I know he's an online entrepreneur. He's a coach. He's an author. You know, I've put it down in my mind. I have this, you know, one or page and a half description of who Edgar is. So I know who I'm talking to. And by doing that, I'm actually going to be able to give a marketing message that, you know, again, it's not going to be a million people who are going to hear and say, ooh, that's me. But there will be 10, 20, 50,000 people who would hear and say, ooh, he's talking directly to me. And
yes.
When you have that kind of level of marketing message, it will be much more effective than anything that's broader. So that's the kind of level I think that people need to be thinking about is who is your ideal customer? Put a name to the person. Think about the age. Think about the income. Think about all of those things, because it will just make it easier for you to really speak to your target audience.
Yeah, and so I hope that people are taking down or making notes, I would call it at least mental notes of some of these nuggets. I mean, you know, again, get it in writing. It's very simple. It doesn't have to be a complicated contract, but something is better than nothing. And then, of course, you know, so that was the first big nugget. And then what did we talk about after that? Oh, trade secret might be better than a patent. We talked about that. I think that's an easy, a great idea. Again, maybe having a confidential agreement might be the thing for you. And then I love this idea of really, you know, spending some time in developing that avatar. A paragraph might take you 3 or 4 months to actually hone in and put together. But let me tell you, it's going to save you so much time in the future. It's going to make your life easier. I think, you know, Bobby, that's a great example of taking the time and developing that paragraph so you know who Edgar is in your heart, in your mind. You can see that person. You can market to that person. You can build articles to entice that person. You can, again, everything can be prepared in order to serve your avatar, Edgar, the best way possible. Man, I tell you what, Bobby, this has been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed our time together. Looking forward to having you back again.
I've had fun. I'd be happy to come back anytime you think it'd be useful.
Great. Thank you so much. Looking forward to it.
Okay,
good stuff
thanks.
There from Bobby Klink, Robert Klink, and that's spelled C-L-I-N-C-K, attorney at law, best-selling author as well. And just, you know, the guy had at least three, maybe four good, solid pieces of information that you can take and apply to your life today to make it better, make your business better, make your career better, make everything in your life better. You know, there are so many of them. The trade secret one I love the most, because we sometimes we get hung up on how do we protect this, and we don't have the money to get a patent. A trade secret might be the deal. And anyway, get it in writing, protect yourself with at least a trade secret, and get your employees to sign off on a confidentiality agreement. And, you know, he mentioned going to a place like LegalZoom, but you know what, maybe having an attorney, and you spend $400, $500, $1,000 with an attorney, and you get all the stuff done, may also be something that might be best for you. As always, I'm excited that you stopped by. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, youtube.com, Burt J. Martinez. And remember, as always, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.